I was in Toronto, I was visiting my sister-in-law, who was living in a boat in Mississauga Harbor, until she had a baby. Then she decided boats weren't safe for homes, so she moved to Pictou, which is somewhere in out east in Canada. The title of my talk has to do with liquid plugs and surfactant delivery, and I sort of broadened it out a bit since I was able to focus in the last 24 hours about it. So anyway, I thought a meeting like this, there's so many people that are interested in modeling, that I'd touch on a number of things that we've done over the years where there's lots more modeling to do. So hopefully for many of you who are here to develop modeling expertise to put in new areas, this would be like a smorgasbord for you. So should be fun. So I guess, I taught yesterday till 6:30 and I drove in last night, so you had people tell you about surfactants already, but I'll tell you a little bit more about the delivery mechanisms that we've been investigating, and then sort of general ideas of liquid plugs and thin films and surfactants and alveoli and things. So you've been shown probably pictures of the airway tree. It's a branching network of tubes, and these tubes are coated with a thin liquid layer, and down towards the alveoli you have these cells that make the surfactant, and that surfactant ends up getting distributed up through the tree due to constant motion of the liquid out of the lung. Here's the respiratory zone, and we just saw a picture of this from the previous speaker, but these alveoli are like the air sacs, and they're coated with a thin liquid layer that has these important surfactant molecules, and the surfactant reduces the surface tension and keeps the lung pliable, makes it soft, easy to breathe. The babies who are born prematurely that don't have enough of this have very stiff lungs, and it's hard for them to breathe, and you have to treat them by delivering new surfactant into their lungs. Here's a picture. How do I do this? Oh, wait, is that for change? Which one is the light? Is that the light? Or is that going to change my slides? Oh, it's broken. Oh, okay. I didn't understand why there were two screens until I sat down, and just as the speaker was to speak, someone sat right in front of me. And then I was able to see it because there was this screen to the right. So I thought that was very... Oh, thank you. Oh, that's great. Thank you. This is the group at North Carolina. There's someone here from North Carolina. Yeah. You know, there's a very strong group in the respiratory area that works on cystic fibrosis. And Rich Superfine is a very good friend of mine. So here's a picture from one of their growing of epithelial cells that make mucus, alveolar cells that make mucus. So you have a mucus layer and the periciliary layer. And then you've seen this picture already of an alveolus with the surfactant layer. And then the type 2 cells, the type 1 cells are the flat ones that make up most of the surface area. And there's the alveolar macrophage, always busy, because you're always breathing air that has bad stuff in it, and it lands on the surface of your lung, and that gets eliminated out. And all day long you're swallowing that, the liquid lining of your lung, you're swallowing it. So it goes out through the other end. So you can think of each of us as cleaning the air, but fouling the water. So anyway, that's what we do. So I'm going to talk about liquid plugs and the intrinsic formation of liquid plugs in airways is something that you get with too much fluid in your lungs. So congestive heart failure, asthma, emphysema, things like that. Then the extrinsic liquid plugs that you get in your lung I'm going to mostly focus on surfactant replacement therapy. But of course, there are others. Near drowning is a bad way to get liquid plugs in your lung. I've worked quite a bit in a field called liquid ventilation, where you, instead of breathing air, the subject, usually an animal, is breathing a perfluorocarbon liquid that fills their lung. And so one way to reduce the surface tension between what you're breathing and the liquid lining of your lung is don't breathe a gas, breathe a liquid. There's a movie, The Abyss. You saw this in The Abyss. Also, people are delivering surfactants now for many, many years, and so they feel safe squirting surfactants into lungs, but you can add stuff to the surfactant. So drugs, genetic material, stem cells, people are thinking of using it as a vehicle for other kinds of delivery. So here's an example of intrinsic plugs. You have your liquid lining of your airway, and you develop a Aurelian stability and form a plug. So that will only occur if the liquid layer thickness is thick enough. If it's too thin, you'll just form bumps, but not a plug. And of course, if the airway itself is flexible, that enhances the instability because the surface tension pulls the walls closer to each other, which accentuates the curvature in the cross-sectional plane, and that's what is the unstable formation issues. Here you would see a repeated formation of a liquid plug from one of our experiments. Then the way to clear the plug is you have breathing. So you force air, and if the trailing film is thicker than the precursor film, then on the average you're dumping off more liquid than you're picking up, and it breaks. If there's flexibility, it's a little more complicated. This is work that I did with Don Gaver and Oliver Jensen. The treatment, so here's a 2-pound baby, and these are more or less the individuals who get this surfactant replacement therapy. And there are a number of different companies that make surfactant, but the idea is you put a catheter down into the endotracheal tube and you squirt it into the lungs and roll the baby around in different directions to try to use gravity to your best advantage. And there's not a whole lot of physics understood about this. This is where we've done quite a bit of work, sort of a two-phase flow system in a branching network of airways. So just to review, some of the earlier work we did was analytical. Here, this is with Peter Howell and Sarah Waters, who was at Nottingham. She's a postdoc with me, but now she went to Nottingham. Now she's at Oxford with Peter. And so this is a liquid. This is a plug in a flexible tube, and you have a driving pressure P1 minus P2. And a speed U, and surface tension sigma. And so what we found in this kind of scaling for small capillary number is that the plug itself is mostly in viscid, and you have these transition regions where you have the balance of viscous and surface tension gradient forces, surface tension forces, and these transition regions. And what we were able to, because the wall is flexible, you end up with really three regions. You have this inner region, or outer region. You have an inner region and a transition region, and they have three different length scales to them. So the wall elastics and tension and plug core viscous effects are negligible. The transition region dominates when G1 is a measure of the flexibility, goes to zero. So the idea here was, here's a plug moving along, and this was a case where the precursor film was thicker than the trailing film, so this plug's going to grow, and here's one where the precursor film is thinner than the trailing film, so this plug will eventually rupture. What are the criteria for the rupturing? And so this was done as a function of capillary number for different values of the flexibility gamma. So here you see for these capillary numbers it's going to grow, and then for these it's going to eventually rupture. So here are the regions of matching that that come from this what we would call a generalized Landau-Levitch equation. And they basically, one is a balance between the surface tension and viscous forces. The other is a balance between the surface tension and wall elasticity forces. So you get an extra length scale there. So you end up having to match, doing a method of matched asymptotics, you have to match two different layers. Then Hideki Fujioka did some computational work. Here you have a dissolved surfactant with a bulk concentration C, and gamma is the surface concentration. And again, you have a driving pressure P1 minus P2, and this is a rigid channel. And you have precursor film H2 and trailing film H1. Now these were steady. So the only way to have steady flow is that H2 equals H1. The plug doesn't grow or decay. One of the inputs is H2, but the other input is the upstream concentration of gamma of the surface of the surfactant. So when you do that, there are a lot of equations to solve. This was finite Reynolds number, so it's an Navier-Stokes finite Reynolds number, and the boundary condition along the interface. So you have the you have the jump in pressure due to the curvature, and then you have the Marangoni flows due to the gradient of the surface tension. Lots of parameters: the Reynolds number, capillary number. We actually, it was a little confusing because the speed is in both of these, so we chose the Reynolds number and then the ratio of the two, so this one doesn't have the speed in it. And then the idea is once the clinician chooses whatever surfactant they're going to use, everything's set, but one thing that can change is how fast you put it in. So the velocity seemed to be an important thing for us to look at. The bulk surfactant transport equation. We saw all these earlier today, the interfacial surfactant transport equation and then the dimensionless parameter of that. You get a Schmidt number for the bulk and the surface. What equation did we use for the... Yeah, so we used the... And we had a cutoff on the... So it was sort of a sharp cutoff here we use an exponential, so I'm not sure how that fits with the one that you use, but it gives the right tailoring, I think, to get to a maximum. So anyway, that's the relationship between the surface tension and the surface concentration. You get adsorption and desorption parameters, as you saw in one of the earlier talks. So here's a result. So now this is steady, and you're in the frame of the plug. So the wall is moving to the left at speed minus one, okay? And you're in the frame of the plug. So you have this wall layer of liquid that moves along with the wall, and then you have this standing vortex, and then you would have the mirror image up here. And there are four stagnation points here, 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 and here. And the precursor film, because the plug is advancing into this film, you end up with a capillary wave ahead. Behind, you don't get it. You get a capillary wave ahead, and you get a very thin region. So this is important. One of the things I was talking about to the eye people about is this is very important because you end up with very high shear stresses there. And this wall is made up of airway epithelial cells, which can be damaged from this. No surfactant. Right. So what happens when you add surfactant? Lots of things. So one is that the four stagnation points have now all moved to the center line. Remember, there was one there and one there and those guys. Now they're all on the center line, but these have moved inland. They're no longer on the interface. They moved into the interior. So you now have a streamline. This surface streamline goes up, and then it comes down. And then it goes up, and then it comes down. Remember, before we just had a vortex cut off from the rest. So it changes, the flow has reversed there. And that's due to the Marangoni effects. Importantly, this layer is much thicker now. That, if you remember from the previous picture, this was very thin. Now this is a lot thicker, and that's protective of the cells. So surfactant has the capability of protecting the cells by the fact that it results in a thicker layer. Now this again, this plug could be we're delivering surfactant. It could be your own liquid plug that you form from airway closure. This is just a longer plug. That's all. And so you start to get these effects of the rotation affecting the pressure gradient. Again, though, this is with surfactant, so you have a thick layer. But the in this particular case, you have a stagnation point that on the rear that's different from the one on the front. So here you have a stagnation point on the surface in the rear, but not on an extra one on the surface in the front. Sorry. It was evenly distributed.
Everywhere.
Yeah, it was just evenly distributed. Sure, yeah. Yeah, sure, sorry. Here. So it's the pressure jump is proportional to the surface tension times the curvature. And then then you have the gradient of the surface tension has to be matched by the shear stress. Yeah. I did that one, right? Yeah, so we got very interested in what's happening on the wall, the pressures and the shear stresses. So here are different Reynolds number values, and this is the picture for the wall pressure, and this is the picture for the wall stress. Now remember, this is LP equal 2, I think. So most of the plug is between minus x equal minus 1 and x equal 1. So this would be like the back end of the plug, and this is the front end of the plug. And you see ahead of the front, you get these big oscillations. That's due to that capillary wave that's out in front. And the pressure on the wall gets to be very high, very highly varying in space, in X. Now, it turns out, Don Gaber, my former student, who's now at Tulane, he has showed that this can be one of the more damaging things to cells. That is, if you have a layer of cells, and you have a pressure on all of them that's equal, that's not so bad. It's when you have a layer of cells and you have a high pressure here and a low one there. So the cell distorts and tears. And so it's really the pressure gradient, the wall pressure gradient, that can be quite damaging to cells. And here you see these rapid changes. And the same for the shear stress. So here you have the shear stress, and you have also these rapid changes. So again, if you have a layer of cells and everybody's seeing the same shear, that's not so bad. If one guy's seeing that shear and another one that, then it's more of a tearing of the cell membrane. Now this is unsteady, so it's the same idea, except now you're starting from scratch. Hideki, we published this in the Physics of Fluids. So I won't go. All right. So now we have movies of these plugs. Here you have two plugs, and they differ only that the precursor film here is 0.05, and the precursor film here is 0.01. So you can see that's a thicker green line than that one. And we're going to plot underneath the wall pressure and the wall shear stress. The same here. The red is wall pressure, and the blue is wall shear stress. So you see, when the precursor film is a lot thinner, how how very much more acute are the changes, as well as the magnitudes, of the shear stress and pressures. And so our code doesn't. Someone asked about. Can you handle the pinch off? And I published a paper with Wei Shi last year on a model that was able to do that. But anyway. Now here, so that was without surfactant. Now we'll do the 0.05 for both, but this one's going to have surfactant and that one not. Okay, so this one you've already seen, and this is the one with surfactant. Now, what do you notice about the one with surfactant? It didn't rupture. So, believe me, we hunted for this parameter set that gives this result. But with the surfactant, you're able to maintain the length of the plug. Now, if your goal... Go ahead. Not too much. Not too much. Well, your eyes may deceive you. That's a separate issue. But this... Yeah. but the point is, what's your strategy? If what's in the plug you want to deliver to the surface of the airways, which would you choose? Yeah, because this guy dumped off everything, if that's your target. If your target's farther downstream, you want that. Yeah? Yeah. That's just from simple mass, volume. Well, once it's here, it just more or less sits there. I mean, things equilibrate. Yeah, it's. Well, zero, on the wall, zero velocity on the wall. Oh, here is. I'm going to guess he doesn't let it out. I'm not sure. I forget. Yeah. No, I understand. Yeah. I don't know if it's sensitive to that, but I can look it up to see what Hideki did. Yeah. Thanks. Modeling question. Getting at it. Good. So we're okay. So then, well, maybe you did see that when you add the surfactant, it reduced the stresses as well. Maybe I didn't show you that part. That was underneath the red and the blue. All those go down. So you do, again, protect the cells.
How do you know how much is too much? Do you know what I mean? Because there still is variation. So how do you know maybe the damage occurs at small, very small variation, and so reducing it but not reducing it enough isn't really going to...
What's it? If you could just tell me what it is.
To
reduce the damage? Yeah, maybe I need to run that again.
How much do you have to reduce that variation in pressure and stress to avoid?
Well, the gradient, you see, this is flatter than that. And it's also not as big. The red one, the wall pressure.
Yeah.
And you see, the blue is very flat compared to this blue. So both the amplitude and the gradient, the amplitude of the gradients has been reduced. So again, why is there a plug there? In other words, if you're trying to deliver a drug, you're only going to pass over the cells once or twice, three times in an hour. You're not really going to do much damage. If this is a plug that continues to be created in your lung with every breath, and it flows along and crackles, it makes crackling sounds, which clinicians listen to, I'll get to that, then it's more of an issue. Yeah. Oh, I'm glad I'm showing these slides. This is great. Yeah. Of the.
Of the length of the cell that is defined in
I'm going to show you. I have experiments of cell damage. I'll show you, okay?
Yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is that maybe it's even more helpful if this is self-dimensionalized against the material properties of the cell. So
I'm going to show you real cells that are really damaged with real plugs. Hang on, we'll get there. Why? I mean, of course I would show you that. Now, so this is the same business. I said, now we're going to put gravity into this. And so you might expect, so gravity, say, is straight down. So you might expect some changes here, some asymmetries. So it's basically the same model. Now, just to go back, this is zero gravity. Remember, the wall is going to the left at minus one, and you have this liquid layer against the wall, and then you have this vortex, and then you have the mirror image. Now, what do you think will happen if gravity is straight down? Well, you would think that this trailing film would be thicker than that one. Why not, right? How is that going to happen? Somehow fluid has to get from the top wall to the bottom wall. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure that the picture we're looking at is the entire computational domain. Okay? Yeah, I can't answer that. But you're a very singularly focused questioner, so that's good. It's okay. What did I do? Yeah, okay, so that's no gravity. Now, gravity's straight down. Look what happens now. Now you have fluid going around the vortex, and then through the middle, and around that vortex, and then up down there. So you have now, this guy's thicker than that guy. These two are the same. But gravity now has affected the flow by giving this, the vortices are still there, but he rides around them. Why not? That's for bond number 0.1. 0.6, it's much more accentuated. You get a big swath of fluid making this trip, and of course this is much thicker than that. That's just another one. Here's Reynolds number. Yeah, you get all kinds. But here's with surfactant. Let me show you what happens with surfactant. So now with surfactant, you have the vortex, but maybe it's easier to see here. You have the saddle. Now you have saddle points. So again, sort of the stagnation point moves off the boundary and goes interior. So you end up with saddle points when you have surfactant. So it's interesting that the presence of these Marangoni effects really change dramatically the flow pattern. Cellular damage induced by a liquid plug. So we published this in the PNAS, and this is with Shu Takayama. We hired him into our department. He had never heard of the lung, but I said, you know what, I think liquid plugs might damage cells. Can you go grow some? Because he did a microfluidics work growing cells. This is fantastic. So he has his microfluidic channel, and with a porous polyester membrane, and he grew human airway epithelial cells on it with media above and below, and then he takes the media from above away, so you have an air-liquid interface, starting to look like a simple person's airway. And then this media below, you can that's how you feed and oxygenate the cells, keep them alive. Right, so he set up a microfluidic system that would put liquid plugs over the cells in a channel. So we'll see like this. Okay, so we set it up so you could have these liquid plugs going over these cells repeatedly to see what kind of damage it makes. So now this is a top view, and the cells are deep into the board here, and they're different. So the cells are deep to this, but this plug is going over the cells, and then you take samples of the cells from different parts of the of what the plug is doing. So here. These are 5 plugs per minute and 10 plugs per minute. And these stains are green, means the cells are doing fine. Red means they're not so good. Red is dead. So when they're 5 plugs per minute versus 10 plugs per minute, you get a lot more damage with 10. But that's far upstream. See, the plug is still intact. Farther downstream. Now, here's the place where it was rupturing. A. So, see, he was able to make these plugs more or less rupture at the same spot. That was great. Rupture. It's the same plug over and over again. All right. He's so good technically that every plug looks exactly the same as every other plug. So we think that that's a pretty violent event because you have a surface tension with very, very, very tiny radius of curvature, high pressures, and probably get some sort of... So it's in that region, the rupture region, region A, where you get a huge amount of damage for 10 plugs per minute. Well, so there are a couple doctors in the room. These rupturing events make a noise. It's called a crackle. The crackle is something that doctors listen to with their stethoscope. They put it on your chest. They ask you to take a deep breath, inhale. They're listening for crackles because most of us don't have crackles, but if you have congestive heart failure, if you have a pneumonia, if you have too much mucus, if you have cystic fibrosis, you're going to make crackling sounds because you have a lot of liquid in your airways that have formed plugs and they get popped open when you inhale. So Laennec invented the stethoscope. TB consumption was the big disease in those days. So before there was a stethoscope, how do you think you would listen to someone's chest? Yeah, you put your ear right on the skin. And he was all bent out of shape with the female patients. This just drove him nuts. So he invented this more distant way of doing it. Anyway. Interesting business. He died of TB. If you're a doctor that treats TB patients, you might die of TB. So there's a guy that gave his life to develop that. So you've seen probably some pictures now of surfactant deficiency, hyaline membrane disease. Here you have an x-ray of a patient that's on a ventilator. You see the tube going into the trachea. And a normal cross-section, you have these normal healthy alveolar walls, and now this is hyaline membrane disease. This is the surfactant deficiency state. And as our previous speaker said, you get lots of inflammatory cells, and sort of the alveoli start filling up with pus and debris. And if you do a volume pressure curve, this is normal, and sort of the general slope is a measure of the compliance. And this is from a baby with a hyaline membrane disease, same thing as the surfactant deficiency state. So they have a lot less compliant lungs. Treating with surfactants, you squirt the material into the baby, and you see how the baby is being positioned in different ways. And so we are interested in the physics of all this. So here's an experiment we published with Chris Dawson's group in Milwaukee of just going to inject a liquid as a plug into a rat lung and do imaging of that. So here's a video CT, micro CT. Oh, it's supposed to work. Sorry. Let's see if I can find that one. Oh, all right. Sorry. It played on my computer. This must be a Canadian computer. All right, so I'll act it out for you. Right. So what you'll see, what you see from this is a radio opaque liquid goes in, and it goes. What you see the airways are easier and easier and easier to visualize the airways. Why? Because the liquid is coating the airways. Because it forms these liquid plugs that leave behind these trailing films. So one of the big problems in surfactant replacement therapy, the doctors don't really know what's getting into the alveoli, because a lot of it is stuck on the walls of the airways that lead to the alveoli. And that is actually one of the biggest problems for adults. They don't know that, but if they're willing to listen, I'll tell them. So then we got interested in modeling delivery altogether into the lungs. So what's the basic issue? Is you have a liquid plug, and it comes to a branch point. How much goes this way? How much goes that way? Okay. So if it's tilted, gravity becomes important. So we did some experiments looking at what we call the split ratio, the smaller amount divided by the larger amount, at different orientations of this experimental bifurcation, and. We did some very simple fluid mechanics, just Poisson flow from there to there, and there to there, and there to there, and a simple law of Laplace, a pressure jump, and simple conservation of mass. And from all that, you can get an equation for the split ratio, RS, in terms of the bond number and the capillary number. And then these angles, the branch angle, and then the rotational angle, what we call the roll angle. Pitches this way, right? Roll. So we were interested in this split ratio. And these are experiments and the simple theory. They're not too bad, but we're working down on making it better. So here you have the split ratio goes towards 1 the faster and faster you push the fluid through. Interestingly, there's a minimum capillary number in the parent. That's the speed of the flow in the parent tube. Below which everything goes downhill. The split ratio is 0, and you can think of that as you have flow in the parent and then the two splits. You need to have the pressure at the junction high enough to get anything to go uphill. So you need to have the capillary number in the parent be large enough to have anything go uphill. So that's why you end up with this critical capillary number. So then we thought, okay, we'll make the world's simplest lung. The split ratio we'll put at every bifurcation, and then the deposition ratio, how much gets deposited on the walls of the straight part of the tube, we'll do that. We have an equation for that that Don Gaber and Dave Halpern put together, just to give you the thickness of the trailing film, not for really an infinitely long plug. So there are things to do to make this better, but this we already had as a function of the capillary number. We had that in the vault, so we could then. Do this. You start with a plug. It goes through an airway, goes the length of an airway, and it leaves behind some liquid. Then it splits depending on the orientation. So part of it goes that way, part of it goes that way, and then they leave material on the wall, and you go into this three-dimensional system. So we made an airway tree that had the branch angle and the rotational angle at each generation. So here's a result. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Yes, yeah. No, it's rho g h squared over sigma. So the only thing that's changing is h, yeah.
Okay, absolutely.
That's the only thing that's changing. Yeah. No, I buried the cap of the Reynolds number. Did you say buried or varied? Oh, I varied the bond number when the gravity was important enough to change the flow within the channel. This is more of a global. This is simple Poisson flow. There's nothing. There's nothing interesting going on within the flow. No doubt. This is our first stab at it. So. I make no defense for the fluid mechanics, except that look what we get now. So now this is the baby lying on the left side. Oops. So gravity is this way, to the right. And red is the most, and blue is the least. So you see how much is being delivered to this airway tree, how it's distributed. And this is the first kind of picture ever made. You think of all the drug delivery models there are in the world, there's none for this. There's none for delivery of surfactant. Aerosol delivery, Canada is filled with people that do aerosol delivery. They'll tell you where the aerosol goes, if you do this. No one has anything like this. So this is the beginning of really, hopefully, a way of helping clinicians and researchers in this field understand the delivery process, because still an unfortunate percentage of the kids who are treated don't survive. And one question is the surfactant going to where you think it's going? And what are the issues that would change the distribution? Here, for example, if you just deliver it into the second airway generation on this side, you get mostly this part of the lung, but just the front part. So here's a cut through, a cut through the horizontal. And so now you have a sort of a different distribution. One of the interesting things is that was a baby lung. Here's an adult lung, and we just changed the amount of liquid that was being used in the dose. So at different airflow rates. So here you have zero. None gets to the alveoli. This is the percentage dose that gets to the alveoli. None gets to the alveoli on that line. So you see all these different amounts. These are the smaller amounts, 35, 100 milliliters. For adults, they use 35 for years. Oh, why didn't the adults get better? Well, because it's all stuck on their airways. It's not getting out to the alveoli. So this kind of model can also be used, by the way, in animals. So we could use an architecture that's appropriate for a dog or a cat or a rat or whatever, and make predictions that should fit that anatomy. And then you can try to see how that would correspond to what's going on in the lung. Question? But no gravity. There's no gravity. So everything, it would be as if this picture had uniform red around it. Yeah. But I think you added chemicals to that or something, right? In other words, if there were no gravity, you'd have concentric rings of color here. There was gravity in those models, but it was always in the direction of the airway, no matter which way the airway was pointing. That's right, yeah. Do I have to stop? Well, we did some 2D modeling. Maybe this movie will work. See, it worked on my other computer. On my computer, sorry. Anyway, so this one is... boy, you know, always use your computer. So this is two-dimensional, and so this moves to here, and this moves to there, and this moves down to there. So it's splitting in two dimensions. And these are the split ratio results. So a lot of you have worked, you know, we did this work very early on for spreading surfactant on a thin liquid film. And so we found this new shockwave, Don Gaber and Mike Borges and I thought we would just name it the GBG shock. Don't know what GBG means, but anyway. But just to remind you, so the first problem, it's interesting how I got into this, because I had this award from NSF, which caused me to form relationships with industry, the Presidential Young Investigator Award. So I went to General Motors. You know, what's up? And they said, we have this problem. In the factories, by the end of the day, you can't see from one end to the other because we have all these drills that are bathed in oil, and they're spinning at high RPMs all day long, and they throw off droplets of oil. So they have an oil fog. And I said, oh, how's the breathing going? Well, it got even more interesting. They said, well, in the Army, if this is done on purpose to create fog so the soldiers cannot, you know, can't be seen, but they're breathing it in. So I got interested in an oil droplet on a viscous film of a different surface tension, and I went to look in the literature, and there was these oil, you know, cleaning up oil spills in those days. They had these booms they would use. So this is sort of the boom. But of course, those were all high Reynolds number, deep ocean, things like that. So this was the boom, and then just had this wall and a clean interface and a surfactant-rich interface, and you just look at the steady governing equations, and then limit as the Peckley number went to infinity, and including lubrication assumptions, you end up with a jump there. And the height goes from 1 to 2, and the flow goes from a plug flow to this linear gradient, so this linear flow. So it's a special circumstance of epsilon going to 0 and the Peckley number, surface Peckley number going to infinity, that is no diffusion, and you get that jump. And then when you add diffusion, you get things kind of smooth out a bit. And then Don Gaver did, that was Mike Borges, and then Don Gaver did the unsteady case of a surfactant disc starting off and with no surfactant on the outside, and then you get this propagation of a wave going outward, and you get this steepening and this height. See, it's almost at 1.6 there, so it's going towards 2. Doesn't quite get there. But the important point was that the time rate of change of the speed of the front was in fact equal to the jump and flow volume rate divided by the jump and cross-sectional area, and that's the definition of a kinematic shock wave. So, and I have a move. Oh, well, I suppose that won't work either. Oh, this is terrible.
If you're
important, this one's going to work. So we're looking down on a thin liquid film. There's talcum powder on the top, so you're seeing that move outward. And the lines that these red lines are dye that are on the bottom of the film, right by the wall of the pan. But what do you see here? So remember, the shock had a height to it, but it also had a dip behind it. So as that moving out, that dip gets closer and closer to the wall, and it pinches off, and you get a dry spot. So this surfactant replacement therapy is to deliver the surfactant out to these regions where eventually Marangoni effects will carry the surfactant into the alveoli that are surfactant poor. But you don't want that to happen. Once it ruptures, the propagation stops. So you don't want the surfactant to be too strong. You don't want that gradient to be too strong. So. Should I stop? I have more, but I can stop. I'll stop. You want more? No? All right. Well, this is an oscillating alveolus with surfactant that way H.H. Wade did. These people are all professors around the world now, so he's in Taiwan, and Oliver's at Nottingham, and, well, anyway, so, right, so now, so this is going to be an oscillating alveolus, and it's got surface tension in it, and I'll sort of jump to, and there's absorption parameter, but if you time average the oscillation, you get the steady, you get steady streamlines because it's not reversible. It's not a reversible, you know, out and in are different. So you get steady streamlines. So for an insoluble surfactant, you have one big vortex. As you increase the solubility, now you have a second vortex here, this one here. Increase the solubility more, you have three vortices. So this is interesting because this surface right here is made up of those alveolar type 1 and type 2 cells. Now, how do they communicate with each other? Usually through the bloodstream. But You can have a flow set up in your alveolar liquid that could also transport information from one cell to another. So this is a concept that hasn't been studied in lung physiology, that the lung's liquid lining may also be a way of cell-cell communication. I think I'll stop there. No, yeah, I'll stop there. Thanks.